Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be talking about a very, very special organization. And also, we are going to be giving you a taste, if you will, of young people. And when I say that, I think so often young people are not heard. And this is something that as I am working more and more in the public environment, and I'm meeting with people from all walks of life and of all ages, I think hearing and being aware of how young people think and what it is they're contending with, I think it's a surprise when you hear their voices. And that is what we're going to be talking about. A publication called A Secret Chord, Poetry, Stories, and Art. This is an affiliation, a publication that I've had the privilege of doing interviews on with a gentleman, Victor Trillo, and also we've got a young person joining us this time, Tyler Stonebreaker. And we are going to be talking about the organization, the Pathfinder and the Pops Club, because this is something that is so significant. This is a publication where young people have a voice, and Victor has been engaged with this for years. And when we're going to have a chance to get feedback from Tyler, I think you'll find the conversation not only eye-opening, but I think you'll also find that we should not give up on our youth. There's a lot of tough situations out there, and they, just like us, those of us that are older, have to walk their own journey. Victor and Tyler, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, when I first became acquainted with you, Victor, the Pathfinder Network was putting out its very first book. Is this number 4 in the books that have been put out? What? How many have you put out every year?
So, yeah, first off, good morning, Donna. It's great to be back on the Donna Sebo Show. We are just fans of your show, and this is actually our third book we're putting out, but it's our 11th anthology in total ever since the Pathfinder Network has acquired Pops the Club. Pops the Club put out 8 books prior, and now with the Pathfinder Network leading the charge, I will say, to support these young, amazing authors. This is our third anthology, and it's called A Secret Chord. So, but altogether, there's 11 of these amazing books, and you can find them on our website, outofthewoodspress.com.
Well, I was so impressed with the very first one, you know, that you presented to me, and the fact that there's been 11, I think this shows how important it is, writing, being able to communicate through art, and this is something I found that was so significant. But what people are not aware of regarding the Pathfinder and the Pops Clubs is that a lot of these young people have been incarcerated. They've been in detention. And today's world, there's many of them that have the big fear of being deported. All of these various conditions that people of different backgrounds are going through, families are going through, and to know that there is this opportunity to have an environment where young people can participate and actually creatively, through their art, photography, their writings, whether it's poetry or a story, all of this is extraordinarily important. It gives them an opportunity to have a voice. And Tyler, I would like to know how you became acquainted with Pops and the Pathfinder. What brought you into their environment? Where are you located?
Yeah, so I joined the Pathfinder Club. I was around, I think, 15 or 16. This was like four-ish years ago, I believe. I like joined because like I had a couple of friends going when they first started up over at the Park Rose High School over in Portland, Oregon.
Oh.
And so we like my friends were like telling me about it, and I decided to go for like one club, and like, you know, I just kept coming back every week just because like it felt like a very welcoming environment to me, and like compared to like what I was like doing at home. And like it also like gave me something like productive to do instead of like doing things I was doing that like I probably shouldn't have been doing at that age. And so that was like the main reason why I kept coming back, is just like it gave me a place to like really like express myself and like be myself without like the fear of like being judged for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you have something that you wrote that I felt was very significant, and I'm going to read it for my audience. I need to say half of the people I chill with are scared of getting deported. I need to say not one of those people who's scared of getting deported has done anything wrong. I need to say that this fear of deportation doesn't just affect one person. It affects everybody who knows that person who is afraid. I need to say I do not get why the government is fear-mongering about immigrants. Now, those are very, very powerful words, Tyler. When you wrote those words, you obviously were in the midst of really seeing a lot of things that were going on and how people were being very much intimidated by them.
Yeah, because I remember when I wrote this piece, I was, this was about, like, the start when, like, Trump was doing, like, all the ICE stuff and, like, that stuff, like, the beginning of it. And since then, I've had, like, a couple people that I know that, like, I'm pretty close to that have been, like, deported. And, like, I feel like it's really, like, it affects, like, the whole community, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, seeing, like, people, like, get kidnapped on the street. I've been to, like, several, like, ICE protests within, like, the last year. Like, seeing, like, I literally been, like, pepper sprayed by, like, ICE agents for, like, just being there, you know? And, like, I think the way they're treating people is just not, it's just not right.
When you get submissions, Victor, and you have so many talented young people, really, just very, very talented young people, the art in this book. I think of Haley Garcia. Her artwork is just phenomenal, and there's others as well. This must be pretty hard to put this anthology together because you probably get so many submissions that to be able to choose the few that go into a secret chord, that has to be a big challenge for you, Victor.
Well, I'll say this. We're very grateful. We're very grateful. We have 12 clubs across the country, predominantly in high schools, as well as community centers, and as well as juvenile justice facilities. And I'll tell you what, right now in the present moment, every piece that is submitted, we make it work. We want every young person that is attending the Pathfinder Club, Pops the Club, we want them to feel that their work matters. And that's what we train our staff, our facilitators, our volunteers, is submit the pieces, let us do the adult work, we'll get it in the book. This book entails over 60 young authors. We serve approximately 300 youth a year nationwide within the Pathfinder clubs. And I will tell you, we haven't had a situation yet, Donna, where we can't fit the material in the book. So we're averaging pretty high. But again, it's back to what Tyler was saying. We want to have a space. We know that there's 1 in 14 young people impacted by incarceration throughout the country. That's equivalent to 5 million people. And our mission is to provide an arts-based club where it's safe. Youth are coming in. They're building community. They're looking for their future potential, but as well as they're processing that shame, that stigma, that harm that is attached to these systems. And they're having an outlet to be able to self-create, to self-express, and to have their voices amplified. And this is what these anthologies are all about, amplifying the voices of our youth that are participating in our clubs.
Bradian Donovan, one of the very first sentences, my dream future is to be free, to be able to do what I want, when I want. I want to learn about myself and live my life to the fullest. I've always wanted to have a family, mainly to have kids. I want to be a mom. I want to be somebody's support system, someone they can turn to no matter what. I never want someone to feel judged around me. Now, that's just one paragraph out of what this young woman has written. I found a maturity in many, many of the statements that were made by the young people, their poetry, the art, the expression that they have. And when you read a statement by a young person saying, I'm too young to understand why daddy's not around, too young to understand the pain that led to internal warfare, blocking out sound, too young to understand the consequences of mommy's action and why it happened, too young to understand redemption is for all. Now, when you're reading this, these are expressions and statements that adults would make. This is right. Something where I think we undervalue the capability of young people speaking up and speaking out. Now, one of the gifts, and I use that word deliberately, that POPs and the Pathfinder bring to young people is a sense of safety. Now that, because a lot of them have been through so much of a difficult time. Tyler, being the young person that you are, was safety a significant part of being a part of the environment of POPs and the Pathfinder?
Yeah, I would say I felt like pretty safe like when I was there. Because, like, outside of, like, going to, like, the clubs and, like, that stuff, like, I kind of, like, came up in, like, a gang, like, related area. And so, like, with that, I was, like, kind of hanging out with, like, gang members and stuff. And, like, through joining the Pathfinder Club, I kind of, like, started shying away from them and, like, just started, I feel like I've been a lot more safer since I started joining.
Mm-hmm. Victor, there are adults, obviously, that are a part of this organization, and they work with the kids. You have volunteers. And when you have these young people, and they are feeling safe, and they are interested in expressing themselves, and they're not going to be judged for what they say, this is something that is really enforced with the adults that participate in this, in either one of these groups. What is it for you that when you're working with the young people, you've been doing this now for a few years, what is it that is so important when the adults are communicating with the young people? What is it that you really emphasize so that they know that they are safe, that they can be able to speak up and speak out, because some of these kids have gone through some pretty nasty things.
Yeah, and you know, that is the highlight of why we created POPs the Club, Pathfinder Club, is for that precise reason. You know, we know this, we know the data of 1 in 14 children being impacted, but we also understand a lot of our staff have the personal lived experience, and I myself, growing up with my father incarcerated, I was that young person at the time, didn't feel like I had an outlet. There was not a Pathfinder Club around where I could build a community where I can meet others who are going through similar impacts. So what I do on a daily basis, ensure our staff, our volunteers, our team, they're trauma informed. And, you know, I know that could be considered just a word that we use loosely, but at the Pathfinder Network, we have a specific training to be able to look for signs, look for warnings, but also to bring our authentic self into each club session. You know, we greet with our eyes, we greet with a handshake, you know, we speak affirmations, we're encouraging, we're inspiring. And Donna, I will say it's an honor to have Tyler on the call with us. Tyler joined 4 years ago on May 5th, 2022, when we first launched. He stuck with us for 4 years at the high school. He is thriving, he is successful, he's involved in film, you know, he's also working, he's on his lunch break right now with us. One of many examples of what the work we're producing at the Pathfinder Club. So it's a great honor to have Tyler here. But bringing my authentic self, my lived experience, and just being present and listening, I need to be able to listen to what young people are saying because they're a great educator.
Yes, they are. And they are going to be creating their own future. And this is very important. It is something that many times when we become more mature as adults, we're so busy with what we're doing that we are not able or don't know how. Maybe that's a better way to say it. We don't know how to make it okay that they are going to need the support necessary so that they can have their future, if you will, because they're going to be creating their future. And Tyler, I really appreciated in the book here, A Secret Chord, you said, without the Pathfinder Club, I'd probably be dead or in jail. And when you joined the club, it was the darkest point in your life. You were lost. Your mindset wasn't in the right place. And you've been able to really see how to make a shift in your mind and in your thinking. That's incredible. I mean, there's a lot of young people that wouldn't even be willing to admit that. That's a tremendous sign of maturity and personal responsibility. When you joined the club, Tyler, what was your worst expectation? Did you feel like you were just a throwaway?
Yeah, honestly, I did. I felt like, because the same, like, weekish that I joined the Pathfinder Club, I had somebody try to, like, murder my brother and, like, you know, like, my family. And so I felt like, during that time, like, before I stepped in the club, I was, like, kind of like, I don't really know what to do with life. Like, I didn't know if I was going to make it, like, the next week, you know? And, like, through that, like, I found, like, kind of, it kind of gave me, like a glimmer of, like, hope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like I, like, had, like, life in my soul again after starting to go to, like, the Pathfinder Club, which, you know, it's a beautiful feeling.
I agree. I think that's so important. And, Victor, turning around a mindset of fear, any of us that have lived long enough will say, yes, I know what that is like. We've experienced it in one way or another. But in social circles, and I think of a young person that was in my family, and how the peer pressure was so strong. This young person did things that in her right mind she never, ever, and I say that not to be sarcastic, because she wasn't in the right mind. She was in the mindset of others that wanted to dominate her. And eventually she came out of that. But it was a pretty ugly row of experience that she went through. This is hard, because the first thing you're going to feel is shame. And so many of these young people that you have in the book, their photography, like Petals with Roxy Menard, and the guilt sometimes that some of these people, these young people, feel, and yet they've grown out of it. They realize that that is not their burden to carry. And you have a Hazel D'Alba, and her statement is, the best lessons in life do not come easy. I know it's easier for me to tell you about all the hardships I went through without taking into consideration the hardships of the reader, but the best lessons in life do not come easy. Boy, that wisdom is so true. It is so true. Is it sometimes difficult to be able to talk about these things openly? Do you have, like, circles of people, you know, young people, where they're able to hear other people's stories and say, wow, you've gone through this, I guess I can manage that? Or do you have them sometimes saying, this is silly, this is a waste of my time, I really don't want to be bothered with this, and walking away, and they're hurting so deeply inside they just honestly don't know how to relate? Have you had, let's say, both of those scenarios?
You know, Donna, the answer to both is yes. And I would say that our model, and I know this firsthand, you know, being the manager of the Pathfinder Club for the last 4 years, being involved in this work for the last 15 years, with our Pathfinder Club model, we have a social emotional learning curriculum, and it's all geared towards building self-esteem, you know, repairing relationships, thriving academically, being optimistic to the future. And what our motto consists of is, through writing, through art, through having guest speakers, you know, we create an atmosphere where initially when you come in, yes, you may be suspect, like, what is this place? You know, I don't know if I want to be here. However, you know, what I hear time and time again after a few club sessions, even our data reflects this, I will say. Our data reflects after about four or five times attending the club, you are actually developing social domains. But what's really unique is our motto is we start off with called breaking bread. Out of all every club session, we have a nutritious meal that we're fortunate through amazing funders to be able to provide food. Our staff, our volunteers, we wait on the Pathfinder Club members. We serve them. We pick up their trays. You know, we're having announcements and shout-outs, gratitudes before we're diving into the work, I will call it, where we're writing or we're drawing. And I'm just going to give all praise to the model because the model is designed to be able to take somebody who may have that shame, who may have that stigma embedded with them, and they may be suspect in the beginning. But as the time goes on and the community wraps around them, everyone starts expressing. I've seen it firsthand. I see it every day, and it's a brilliant thing to see thanks to our model that we have.
Mm-hmm. I think that that is very, very significant, and I really think that with a lot of these young people, they come from homes that are very disruptive or they have been engaged in environments that take away their identity as an individual. And to rediscovering themselves and be in a safe environment, I think, is extraordinarily powerful. You have a writing that's done, a commentary by Doroni. It's called My Skin.
And yeah, it's Darion.
Yeah, Darion. Thank you for correcting me. I really appreciated the openness of what she wrote. She said, I've been judged by people of my own race. They start to make me believe there's something wrong with the skin I was born with, the skin that I can't help or change. At 15 years old, I'm trying to break a stereotype that was imposed on me when I was born. That little bit in her commentary just really grabbed my attention because I don't care what a person's race, gender, is, it doesn't make any difference what your nationality is. This is something I know I experienced as a young person myself, and I'm Caucasian. So people might say, oh, no, you couldn't have gone through that. Yes. So when you have people of your own, let's say, race that put you down and you are trying to keep yourself on your feet, I don't care who you belong to ethnically. I just think this is something we need to have integrity with. And I think the adult population needs to understand that. It's the quality of character that makes a difference. Let's look at the quality of character, not just be caught up with all of this, I think it's nonsense, of skin color, gender specificity. I don't care. Let's look at the quality of the human being that's in front of us, that's with us at any time. And this is something that comes across very strongly in your group. It's looking at people as individuals. So collectively, the thinking is cleaned up. It's cleaned up. And I really think that's extraordinarily powerful, Victor.
Yeah, shouting out Darion. We did an interview a couple weeks ago, and just phenomenal. And we always ask, what piece would you like to share? Darion's like, I'm sharing this piece, and just did it so bravely. And back to what you were saying, Donna, is we're very fortunate because the atmosphere that we're creating in the Pathfinder Club, where we don't have no lens of skin color, we don't have no lens of background. We're a community. And I think our value of having that mindset community, it also trickles to our Pathfinder Club members, and they see everyone as a community. And just as Tyler wrote about earlier, seeing friends firsthand being subjected to deportation and their families, you know, it affects us all. We all say when one person is locked up, the entire family is locked up. If a person is deported, the entire family is deported. Everyone's impacted. And knowing firsthand of the impacts of what these systems create, we're just so fortunate at the Pathfinder Club to be able to have a community and have an outlet where we're supporting each other. We're uplifting each other.
And I think that that is a theme that these young people that are associated with the club, they're going to carry that forward in their lives as they recognize that they have value. And then some of the stories in the book, A Secret Code, that the Pathfinder and the Pup Clubs have put here into my hands, which I'm very grateful for. It took my thinking process into a level of awareness that I think of social workers and people that deal with different environments of family situations, drug addiction, health issues, hunger, people not having money to buy food, all of these various things. This is just a tremendous program, and it's throughout the country. And this is something that has made such a difference. Tyler, I'd like to ask you, because you've matured into a very fine young man, and you're going to be maybe going on to college or some kind of special training, serving, maybe an apprenticeship, whatever your choice is going to be. When you look at your club association, how has it inspired you to look at your education as something as of value?
I would say, like, just wanting to have more of an education, because, like, before, like, when I was, like, before the Pathfinder Club, I kind of just didn't, like, have, like, a direction in life. And, like, through that, it was, like, the summer of, like, I think it was, like, 2023, we did a 2-week film intensive, like, with the, I can't remember, it was like OT, it was like a company called OTR. I can't remember.
Outside the frame.
Like that,
outside the frame.
Yeah, outside the frame. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay. And I just fell in love with film from that. And so now I'm like running my own film business right now. I'm doing music videos with people. And like soon I'm going to be going to college for film, like just to get more connections. Like I feel like that's really helped me out. Like have a better outlook on the future.
Well, Tyler,
I'm really sorry, but I gotta.
I know you've got to go, so go ahead and go. I'm so delighted that I've had the opportunity to chat with you. I'll be continuing my conversation with Victor here for a few more minutes. So, thank you for being a part of the show.
Oh yeah, and thanks for having me. It was good being on.
Thank you, Victor.
Yeah, how's it going?
Yes, I know that he's got to go, and that's fine. But when Tyler was speaking, and when he was just answering my question, and of course I was trying to watch the clock because I know how important it is for him to be on time. And I'm so grateful for him taking this lunch hour, because a lot of people his age would say, I can't do it. I can't do it. So I'm very grateful that he was with us. Victor, the objectives for the club, I know that you're wanting to grow the club, POPS, Pathfinder. When you're looking at what has evolved in the many years that you have been associated with it and the associations that now have come together to support each other, how do you see things going forward? What are some of the dreams of the Pathfinder and POPS clubs?
Yeah, so, you know, fortunately, you know, through our great leadership at the Pathfinder Network, you know, our executive director, Leticia Longoria Navarro, our board of directors, you know, we're supported with creating this model that is going to be a licensing model. And our goal is to extend our reach. And when I say that, I don't say it lightly. We want to bring Pathfinder Club to every local community center, to every detention center, to every high school across the nation and beyond, where there's impacts, where there's need. Our model is designed to be able, you know, you can launch it from a kitchen table, from a backyard to a state-of-the-art classroom to a theater setting. You know, it's just a matter of having our program manual and our curriculum, which shows you how to run a Pathfinder Club. And the unique thing about it is our network is committed to supporting agencies or entities that are going to license the Pathfinder Club, where we'll provide support. You also have connections to be able to submit publication from your clubs, from the Pathfinder Clubs, to our annual anthology. We're going to continue our annual anthology, and we're going to continue to leverage and extend our reach and create our visibility, you know, for the larger scale, so that youth around the country could be able to have a voice and have a community where they're supported by the impacts of incarceration, detention, and deportation.
That is huge. That is huge. And I think that just knowing that your groups are there would give inspiration to, I think, many, many people who feel like we are, and I'm speaking to adults, of course, when I'm saying this, that feel like this is something that is a light in a period of tremendous chaos and a lot of confusion and a lot of fear-mongering that has been going on. The book is A Secret Chord, Poetry, Stories, and Art. Now, the website is, and I want to be sure that I have this correct, Victor, thepathfinderclub.org. Is that the correct?
Yes, thank you, Donna. That website is the Pathfinder Club, all one word, thepathfinderclub.org. And we're inviting all listeners to take a look at our website. It is a robust website with current updated information showing the 12 clubs that have the Pathfinder Club across the country. You can see some beautiful pictures. You can see some testimonials. You can actually see some artwork and writing pieces from Pathfinder Club members on our website. So please take a look for more information.
Victor Trillo, I want to, and by the way, your last name is spelled T-R-I-L-L-O, and Tyler Stonebreaker, who had to leave because he had to go back to work, I want to say thank you so very much for being my guest.
Thank you so much, Donna.
We've just said goodbye to Victor Trillo and Tyler Stonebreaker, and I wanted to be sure that you were made aware of the website, which is the Pathfinder Club. org. And I'm really so grateful to have the representation of these two organizations, the Pathfinder Club and POPS. It's making a difference in the lives of young people, and boy, it is an eye-opener when you read the information that's in their books. This one is, again, A Secret Chord, Poetry, Stories, and Art by the young people that really have a voice that need to be heard because they say a lot in the way that they express themselves. All right, I'm going to just have a shift here for just a moment, and we then are going to be sharing some other things with you. So, hey, that's just the way it goes. The show goes on regardless of whatever technology may create in the way of a little bit of chaos, but it goes on regardless. I'm really excited because of the challenges we've had with technology. As I just said, regardless, the show goes on. However, we are expecting our equipment in, and I may be able to have the replacement equipment in place, and we will be back on track with having, I would say, less interruptions. So this is what we're going to do right now. I'm going to say thank you for those of you who are newcomers to the show. We're delighted to have you join us. And remember that the show is Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, the Donna Sebo Show. And then every Wednesday we have a doubleheader like we're having right now. And the Donna Sebo Show is also accompanied by Warriors for Peace from 7 to 8 p.m. So it's one show right after the other. And that is just the way it is. And then, of course, we've got the Donna Sebo television programming, which we are setting up for filming. And as soon as all of that comes together and the show is edited, then I will let you know that it'll be up on YouTube along with the other 19 programs that we have up there right now. And you're welcome to go in and view them. It's the Donna Sebo television show special editions. It's also up on my website. And we play the audio portion of those television programs on the show as well. So when we have the next one all ready to go, we'll be sure to let you know. Now, I also wanted to say to those of you that are authors, or maybe you have a friend who is an author that would like to be featured on one of my programs, television or radio, or both, then you can tell them I need a copy of the actual publication. I don't do PDFs. I have too much material that I go through at any one time. I can be reviewing as many as 4 books. Yes, I interview approximately, well, anywhere from 300 to, you know, to 310 people a year. So it all depends on the length and the volume of the material. But you can send a copy of the book along with contact information, please. Send your name, obviously, your phone number, your email, and your website information. That's very important for me because I want to be able to reach you one way or the other, and it takes time to do this. All of this takes time. So if you will send it to the Donna Sebo Show, that's S-E-E-B-O, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington, 98496. That's, again, the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington, 98496. And allow that it's going to take me some time because, obviously, there are people in front of you that will come first. And that is something that just follow up with me. You can also reach me if you wanted to make an inquiry regarding being a guest on the show. You can make an inquiry through my website. Go to the contact page and then send me an email. And again, send me your phone number as well. It's so much quicker for me when I can call people. And emails are great, but if you're like me and you've got a wacky schedule, sometimes you're not able to get to emails maybe for a day or two. So it really is a good thing when we can connect more quickly and I can have options sending an email as well as perhaps making a phone call. So all of that is very, very significant. All right. That being said, we're going to go on to some information that I had this evening. One of the items that I wanted to refer to is a very simple commentary that was made by a man whose name is Marcus Raskin, excuse me, R-I-S-K-I-N, Marcus Raskin. And he was the, and may still be, I'm not familiar with that, but he was the co-founder and distinguished fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. And at the time, he was asked a question about what did he see for the future, and he responded with 3 very simple sentences. He said, "Visions without attention to material reality and specific practical moral action are of minimum value." That's sentence number 1. Number 2, imagination coupled to disciplined thought can change views of reality, as Einstein showed. Number 3, projects and social inventions can widen the social space of freedom. Very, very profound, succinct thoughts. You know, this is something we as human beings are going to be experiencing always. Why? Because every generation is going to have its challenges. I don't care what period of history you go through. You may find a few incidences in the world where maybe there's been peace for 1,000 years or more. But there's always something going on somewhere. And if it's not politics, if it is not cultural changes in one form or another, social situations that come up, then there's climate. There's all kinds of surprises that Mother Nature brings to us, and we don't usually ask for them. She just says, oh, I think I'll do this today, or I'll do that. And we go, wait, how come you had to do this? Was this really necessary? It's just life. We go through these ups and downs. Unexpected circumstances will hit us at any given time. And that is part and parcel of what the human experience is. We grow through the chaos, the challenges. We grow as we observe life. And if you have the opportunity and the curiosity of learning about human history in various cultures, you will always find those very, very wise people that in one way or another conveyed in their culture the opportunity for people to move forward and to grow into a bigger, better part of themselves. Having vision, experiencing ideas, dreams, working with them. We have millions of people that are doing that today. And all we get is a little smidgen through media, and usually they focus on particular environments, totally erasing a lot of environments that are available to us. So we have to open up our minds and our attitudes and ask ourselves, what if I explored this, that, or the other? What if I travel to an unknown place for me and look at what is going on in another part of the world? Again, it's expanding ourselves. It's expanding our awareness even about our own cultures. It is amazing, I find, and I've been guilty of this, of not even exploring the environment that I'm in. And sometimes circumstances take me into new neighborhoods, different cultural groups, and my world is broadened. It's made bigger. In fact, it has made me, through this broadcasting that I've been doing for over 25 years, it has made me aware of how the threads of connection that we have, sometimes we're not able to see them, but those threads of connection make all the difference in the world. All the difference in the world. And here we are, and we sometimes feel like, wow, we've got a real good grip on what's going on, and then later on we find out we only knew a smidgen of what maybe we should have known. This, you know, these are things that allow us as people, I think, to assume a positioning of humbleness. And why do I say humbleness? Because we really need to be humble and understand that there is so much we don't know. That old adage is the more that we know, the less we know, rings very, very true. Because there's so many aspects to life, so many things that we are finding that we were told in the past that this is an absolute, and we are discovering through archaeology and through new discoveries of this, that, or the other, that guess what? We did not think that this was even possible. We really honestly thought that this was an absolute, and we find that it's not an absolute. It's just like the subject of love. So many people put love in a little tiny box, and you cannot contain it. It's like a rainbow. It comes in many different shades, forms, colors. And when you can discover that one aspect, you'll be amazed at how you see it demonstrated in your life, how you demonstrate it, and how your world is richer because of it. So I just wanted to share that little bit with you. And again, I really appreciated Mr. Raskin's statements because it just expands how we can look at the world, how we can perceive things. Let me tell you, there is a rare day that I do not learn something new. And I just am always in awe of all of the different people that literally make the world go round. And do you know, we've got over 8 billion people on this planet, and I guarantee you, you're never going to run out of something to learn. And that should be exciting. Because if ever you say, I'm bored, I just have nothing to do, well, pick yourself up off the couch or out of your chair or get out of bed, whatever it is, and just take a walk around your block. Or walk into a store and just observe what's going on, who's there, what are the colors that you notice, all kinds of things that you can pay attention to. But it's up to you. If your world is in a box, you're the only one that can knock the walls down, pop that ceiling off, and live life with a quality of, I think, self that'll make you one of the richest people on this planet. One of the things that I am always intrigued with is when I come across information about cultures I have never heard about. One of those cultures is the Naga. Now, these are a people that are well-known in India and in Burma. And there is a man that was discovered, and he's one of the Naga. This is a man who, in growing up, never ever killed another person. And in the Naga tribe, this was research that was discovered. He could not marry, could not speak up or give an opinion of any kind among his people. He had no rank. He was actually treated like a child. He was not involved in any decision. The tribe had only one requirement of its men, and that was to take a human head. And there were 40 distinct warrior clans in the Naga, or within the Naga population. And each one of these clans had their own dialect. They had their own rituals. For thousands of years, these clans, their entire identity came from killing. That's really, really quite interesting. But what was fascinating about the rituals, when a head was taken, the skulls were placed in a place of honor in the homes of that person or someone in the tribe. They would feed the skull regularly, and they would consult the skull before any major decisions were made. The skull was treated as an active member of their community. I know it's going to sound like something out of a science fiction movie, but this is real. Now, the British made a grave error when they were in the Naga territory. And at the moment, I don't remember where it is on the planet, but they were going to take over the area that the Nagas, you know, lived in. However, they underestimated the Naga people. Now, the women and the children of the Naga people had a very efficient communication system. And they kept the warriors informed about everything that the British were doing. The British actually declared war on the Naga people, and the war went on for years. The casualties of the British soldiers were heavier than in any other war, Asian campaigns, if you will. These people were in the Asian area. Again, I don't remember exactly what went on, but they were so ferocious as warriors that any male not willing to kill was put into a serious disadvantage among the people. Now, they didn't kill him, but he was an outsider. Now, this headhunting process of the Naga people, it was fascinating. It was outlawed in the 20th century. It all went underground. The British finally gave up on taking over the territories of the Nagas, from what I was made aware of. Why? Because it was too expensive. The casualties were enormous. These people were ferocious as fighters. And to the best of our knowledge, not much has changed. That taking of the heads is still done in their world today. Again, they were not allowed to have any tattoos. They couldn't participate in any rituals. Anyone that did not choose to follow that call it a tradition, but it was a qualifying statement for the males, especially in and among the Naga people. When you find out about this, and we that live in quote-unquote the modern world will say, oh, that is just something else. But stop and think about the reports that are made on a daily basis of this person or that person being killed in our society by someone, and it's done as revenge or as with the gangs, the territories have been invaded. It's really amazing, an amazing aspect of what goes on, even in our so-called civilized culture. And it is a phenomena that is in so many different cultures. It's absolutely incredible. And there are those people on this planet that they will not, under any circumstances, allow themselves to be conquered. And there are those roles in human history that speak of that quite loudly. Well, I also wanted to touch on a couple of other items. And again, we still are having the challenge with the equipment. I'm waiting for the new equipment to come in. And when that comes in, I am really, really looking forward to being able to set it up and not have to worry about power outages. That is so significant. Many times when we wonder about what we could do to make an income, it's fun to find out about those people that are making an income doing something that you would never have imagined would even be profitable. Well, we all know that if we want to have a portrait done, a photograph, or if we want someone to do an actual portrait, like the old-fashioned way, using paint, watercolors, you know, oils, whatever it is, there is a person that in the Chicago area, his name is Jacob Ryan Reno, I think. Now, he's a part of a public market. And we all in our different communities will have, especially as we're coming into this beautiful time of the year, we have the farmers market, the public markets that open up because the weather is beautiful and people just love getting out and about and just seeing new things and just getting outside, not being cooped up because of the cold winter weather. Well, this is what he does. He appears at the Logan Square Farmers Market on Sundays. And people pay him $5 for a monstrosity. I just laughed when I saw this. And someone did a review on his art, and it was anything but positive. I mean, it's really not good. But he actually has a poster, if you will, that says, "Terrible Portraits." That's it. Terrible portraits, and his name is under there. Do you know what? People will pay $5 to have those terrible portraits. And he just uses black and white. He's not doing anything spectacularly unique, but he loves to do it because it's so much fun. And people love it. They absolutely love it. Because once he's finished with whatever he does, it just is something that makes their day. As ugly as it is, and I've got a picture of what he did with a family, and they just have a great time. They laugh about it. And he's not in any way doing any fake publicity here. He just gives it out exactly at the fact that he is a lousy artist, and that's what you're going to get. You are going to get a monstrosity. Terrible portraits for $5. Well, probably helps him pay for gas, and that is a good thing. But you know what's even more important is that he's having fun. People that interact with him are having fun. And they say it's worth the $5 just to be able to have that experience. And I just tip my hat to anybody that is innovative and creative about what it is they want to do. Renaissance fairs. Oh, my goodness, they're going on everywhere. And here, excuse me, here in the state of Washington, we have been having a Renaissance fair for I don't know how many years. I participated in one locally here for 15 years, and it was always an adventure because we never knew what the weather was going to be like. And we had to bring our own tents. We had to have all of our own stuff because it was out on land, typically farmland. And storms would come raging in. And by golly, we'd have to, you know, pop the canopy on the tents because we would have waters that were making the tent canvas just go down. And we had to let that drain off and deal with mud and with dirt and high temperatures if we got lucky and had a beautiful weather period. I mean, it was just really very much like you would have experienced in the days of the Renaissance if you were a merchant out in the open. Well, those Renaissance fairs, people love. And the reason they like it is that they can often come in costume themselves to be able to be that in that feeling. And the innovation and the creative designs of people, fabulous, absolutely fabulous. I can think of the stilt walkers that we would have at the Renaissance Fair in their various costumes, the pickle lady. We would have all kinds of people that would create an environment that was absolutely marvelous. I loved it because I could always have costumes made by different people, and it was just so much fun creating the costumes. And those costumes you could wear year after year, but the innovation and the creativity of different people. We had one vendor, I remember, that had pirate items that were just amazing. We had others that had things from China, the Middle East, and just all of this creativity. What America was like during that period, Europe. It just is really, really something. And one of the biggest in the United States is the Texas Renaissance Fair. Now, they have more than 500,000 people come out. That's a lot of people. And the people that attend the Renaissance Fair, they will, if they order a turkey leg, they'll say, you know, it tastes more like ham. In fact, it is turkey meat that gets cured and smoked just like ham is cured and smoked. And the cooking is done exactly how it was done in the medieval time frame. And the meat, well, it might taste more like ham, but do you know, turkey wasn't on the menu for most people in medieval Europe. The turkey was introduced into Europe. I don't remember what the time frame was, but it was introduced into Europe, and it really became very popular because raising turkeys was quite easy, and it gave people a source of protein that they really, really liked, and the turkey industry did very well there, and of course, here in the United States, when we've discovered we had wild turkeys. And that was something that was very much enjoyed by the early people in the United States. There were thousands and thousands of those turkeys. But again, at these Renaissance fairs, they often try to create the environment where you feel like you're in that time frame, and it is absolutely incredibly fun. Donna Sebo here. I want you to know that my guest that I had scheduled for tomorrow evening, Rohini, we were going to be talking about her book, The Akasha Information. However, because of our technical problems, we have not been able to have her as a guest. So we are going to be rescheduling her for June, and that information will be going out. Well, I'm going to say goodbye. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Be well. I'll be with you again tomorrow evening. It's going to be an open mic hour, but I am not going to be able to take any calls. So take care. Talk with you mañana. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.